Jericho, Bill Hendrick.
Good evening, Ed. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. I'll tell you, we have our website, philhenryshow.com. We have a new Lions versus Tucson podcast. The Milwaukee Lions have embarked. That was their last preseason game. Jack Igagdor and Brett Morrison. But all of the comedy and satire that we produce on our show, we're putting to one side tonight. Because every night I'm here and creating some sort of a universe that is a theatrical one, that is a fantasy. It's a satire on the business of talk radio. But it's also just sort of a general satire on people and the human condition and attitudes and different personalities and so forth. But tonight I said, forget it, man. I don't want to do it tonight. Tonight I just was not in the mood, to be perfectly honest with you. I wasn't in the mood to work that hard. And I felt that there could be more that I could offer you tonight, just bringing myself to the radio the best way I know how. And that's talking to you straight. There's no question, I mean, you've listened to me, there's no question that I'm dissatisfied in a lot of ways. I mean, what guy or woman does a talk show who is not dissatisfied, you know? But I certainly don't put it on. I don't affect it. And I don't have a particular problem, folks, with much of anything in this world. I got a problem. For instance, I don't have a problem with government. Like I was saying last hour, if you talk about politics any more than 15% of the time, there's something wrong with you. Unless it's your job. You know, if you're working in Washington, D.C., and your job is part of the job of the country or the job of a particular state, I understand that, but it's just not healthy. I don't think it's healthy. With all of the discussion that we have in this country on radio of politics, people don't know their ass from a hole in the ground about it. I mean, I don't think we've ever been dumber when it comes to politics. I'm telling you. You know, you look at as I said last hour, most people know they want to belong to some kind of a club. That's it. You say, well, you're really insulting my intelligence, Phil. Well, I don't mean to do that. What I'm trying to say something here that I think is pretty obvious to people. When we get into a political argument in this country, 9 times out of 10, we're just slagging the other person's candidate or slagging the other side. We don't really know how to prop up our own side. And I just think that's because we don't much care, you know, what it is we're supposed to represent. We just are part of this team. Now, I just saw they've got 4 soldiers down in Georgia. These guys have been indicted for murder. They're a militia. They're some kind of an on-base army gang. They killed a man and his girlfriend. They wanted to overthrow the U.S. government. And when I look at these guys, what do I see? I see 4 guys that used to live in a treehouse together in the backyard of one of their houses. I mean, in other words, I see 4 guys that haven't grown up. Now, I know they've committed murder. I know that that's serious, and that they're going to get, you know, worst case scenario, and one could only hope they would be executed, but, you know, probably not. They'll wind up going to prison for the rest of their lives. But the fact is, these are guys that are not unlike 4 little boys who go up to a treehouse someplace, and they're all upset because they got whipped, or their parents don't love them, or they just feel their dad didn't show up to take them on the play date, or something. You know, there's a lot of hurt going on, you know, and they all group together. Next thing you know, they got a little gang, and they run wild, and they show the rest of the world that they're not going to be punks and picked on. I mean, what the hell do you think a gang is? I'll show you can't hurt me. I'll show you I'm going to hurt you instead. Bang, there it is. Well, same thing with these guys. 4 guys going to overthrow the government, my ass. They couldn't get together, man. They couldn't overthrow. I bet you they couldn't throw a bag of garbage into a garbage truck. They know how to kill a man who's on his knees with his hands behind his back. That much they do know how to do. They believe in anything? Hell no. They want to be a part of some club, man. This country, folks, as far as I'm concerned, is so good, so great to live in, there ain't a whole hell of a lot to find a problem with. I understand that there certain people have a great grievances, but I've always believed, and I'm always going to believe this to the day that I die, I don't give a damn how bad it is here. It's better than it is someplace else. And the proof's in the pudding, man. I don't exactly see a migration of millions, you know, jumping on the next boat or plane out of here and heading to some other paradise. So I can't get that crazy about stuff. So what happens? Well, we got to start to trump it up. Let's start making a, and I use the word Trump in the sense that, you know, not in talking about him. I don't know whether he's full of crap or not. I'm talking about just crap. He has an unfortunate last name. But what I'm saying is, let's start to make it up. Let's start making it up. Making up what? Making up how bad it is. I ain't saying that things have not been bad in this country. But you know what? We made a hell of a lot of progress, and we've made so much progress that it's pissing off some people. It's upsetting to some people. They want to make sure that we never forget that this place can still be one big stinking sewer. And so let's talk about how we're almost going down the commie road. Let's talk about how we're almost going down the socialist road. Let's talk about how, you know, the right wingers could be taking over and stripping us of our rights. Let's make sure that there's a lot of panic going on, okay? Please? Because it's just, you know, it's not good. It's not American. Man, it ain't American to be happy with the country and the way things are going. You can be happy, but you can't. It is not American to be satisfied with your government. That is un-American. I don't have a big problem. The big problems that I've got in this world ain't with the government. It's with some of the dumbasses I work with and some of the, not Dan, I'm not talking about you. It's with some of the dumbasses in my life. Aren't you, isn't the same thing with you? Give me a break, okay? Don't tell me the biggest problem you got is the government. Is the government. Tell me the biggest problem you got. Boy, I tell you, if Obama, or it could be somebody else, Bush. Man, are you kidding me? Obama and Bush, and that is a way of avoiding what the real problem. The real problem in our lives has to do with some of these dumbasses we're hooked up with, man. Either in business, in our families, as our friends, somewhere, or when we're looking in the mirror. That's the number one dumbass. And you want to know something? That guy, we never deal with that guy. Man, we're talking morning, noon, and night. We're wrapping a blue streak about all these guys in Washington that are jacking us around and doing this, that, and something else. There's one major dumbass that we look at every morning when we're shaving, and we ain't done diddly squat about that guy. So I told you I was eating breakfast at a diner. And when I sit down at the diner and I sit there at the counter at the diner, it's because there's an open space and I'm generally not with anybody. I don't mind. I'll sit down and, you know, bang elbows with somebody. I ain't bumping them like Larry Craig, you know. I ain't that wide of a guy. I'm talking about at the diner. And this guy's next to me, and he starts in with, he wasn't like the usual guy that's a little bit crackers, as I was saying, who's, boy, those Dodgers, they're really doing great, huh? And he's yelling at you from way down the counter. This guy's right next to me, and he's, well, we believe that, we. I suddenly realized that I was talking to a guy who's obsessed with a topic, most likely how the government is doing stuff. And I realized that not only was he obsessed, but he also was a part of a group that was meeting on a regular basis, and he invited me to one of their meetings. Well, sir, if you'd like to know more, we have a regular meeting over here at, don't be put off by the house. It's been vacant for many years. I live under it. And, you know, he didn't say that, but it was that creepy. Oh, really? Well, thank you very much. So, in other words, what I was looking at was the embodiment of everything that I have always suspected about this country and people that are obsessed morning, noon, and night with politics. I think you will drive yourself crazy. I think you become slightly psychotic. I think you are untethered. You no longer have a decent connection to reality. You no longer can talk to other human beings in any way that makes them comfortable. You're all messed up. The worst thing that's going on in America today is everybody yakking this politics stuff, and it starts with this here radio. All these guys, man, I've done my speech. You know, I'm not going to go down that road. You know, talking about how what was, you know, at one time could have been a great format has just been destroyed by this obsession with politics. But I'll tell you this much: I've been to talk radio conventions and I've listened to the hosts. And if ever in your life you want to see the definition of the term self-deluded, go to a talk radio convention and listen to the host. Do you know what happens? Do you know what goes on? Do you think they sit and talk about how are we going to make more money? How can we sell our shows better? How can we market our shows better? Do you know what they do? When they're talking to each other. Do you know what they do? They do their shows. In other words, these are professionals that ought to know, oh, it's a bunch of horse dung, man. Let's figure out how we can get another dollar. How do we sell it better? You think they'd be talking about the professional considerations that one would talk about in any industry, right? No. What are they doing? They're doing their shows for each other. In other words, it's not enough to bullcrap you guys. They go back and start BSing each other. They're talking politics. I saw this happen with my own eyes. I stood and I stared and I couldn't believe it. And it was a packed hall and it was hot and people were sweating and it was just, it was killing me, man. And I was with all these professionals. There wasn't one radio listener there, not one person there that we could call audience. They were all professional people. Some of them might have been consultants. Some of them might have been programmers, but everybody involved in the business. And we were sitting there for an hour bullcrapping each other with politics. Like, how's that going to make me any more money? And how is that going to help my radio show get sold or marketed better? And how is that going to convince the guy that runs the syndication company that my show is being syndicated by to get up off his dead, lazy ass and go out and do some work on my behalf? No, instead of talking about that, these guys, the absolute definition of self-delusion, were thinking they were going to convince me with their bullcrap. Like I came there to listen to that. Man, why don't you go back home to your radio station and sell that to your listeners? Don't talk to me. I didn't come here to listen to you. I could care less. Maybe I agree with you. Maybe I don't. And they were being aggressive, and it was almost like they were doing their shows. All right, I'll be back. This is the Phil Hendry Show. Truth is our bitch tonight.
Truth is our bitch.
That's
Phil
right.
Hendry Show.
Tonight. Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show tonight. We're talking about me. How about that? You know. And you know, I just got spaced out for a second because I saw a headline: "Man fatally shoots former coworker is killed." How old is this? Are these stories that we're looking at here? This is a whole weekend. Is that how fresh the news is? I want to mention you guys in Florida. I hope you're safe, and I know you are. I know that you. I don't think it's. I think everyone knows that they want to be safe. You're not going to do anything dumb. You know. Okay. Cool. Good. Don't. Just checking because some people think that they can walk out into the middle of that stuff and, it's nothing, you know, those hurricane winds. It depends on the speed of the wind. You can stand, you'll get hurt, but, I mean, you won't get necessarily hurt, but the wind is going to carry you along. But if you hold on to something, well, you know, if you've got something flying through the air right toward your head and it's the wrong thing, it doesn't matter how hard you're holding on to something. I don't know. I'm just telling you, be cool. Don't act like a dumbass. Most of the people that get hurt in these things are people who, no, I'm not leaving. If they tell you that there is a mandatory evacuation, obviously you got no choice. If they say it's voluntary, well, then you just have to take your chances. I mean, I was in one of those in Florida, and this was for a hurricane that was on its way to the southern coast of Florida in Miami, where I was living. And I was actually living just a little bit north of Miami. It was in North Miami Beach at the time. And that's where this hurricane was going. And it was a voluntary evacuation. So I decided I'd go ahead and I'd evacuate. But I did go back into my apartment, I remember, to get some things. Because I've never lived through a hurricane. I've been through plenty of earthquakes, but I've never actually hunkered down through a hurricane. I've been through some pretty nasty tropical storms, but that's about it. I decided to get some stuff and I would get out of there. And where was I going to go but north? There's nowhere else to go. You're not going to go south because I was going to be further and further into the teeth of the thing. So I decided to go north, and I drove as far north as West Palm Beach because I was tracking this thing, and that seemed to be a safe, far enough away from where this thing was going to make landfall that I decided that I would stay there. And so I did until about, midnight, as I was watching the news, laying there in my hotel room with my stocking feet up and my hands behind my head, as you can well imagine people who are in hotel rooms do, and fully clothed, but there's the, you know, pillow, and I've got a bag of some room service, you know, Chips Ahoy or something sitting next to me, and I look and I see the guy on TV, and he says, "Now as we are tracking Hurricane Irving," whatever it was called, "and you can see it's turning a little bit north and looks like it'll make landfall in West Palm Beach." So I went, well, this is a son of a bitch. That's a hell of a deal, Irving. So at midnight or 1 o'clock, I forget when, after having just checked in just a few hours before, I got my bags and I got my stuff and I got into my car and I left. And I traveled all the way back down there to North Miami Beach, got into my apartment. And so all that happened was a pleasant trip to West Palm to watch television, basically. Because of my own inexperience, you know, that was my own inexperience with hurricanes. I don't know from hurricanes, at least I don't know the pattern, the history of how these things travel. I've certainly seen enough of them on television, and I've seen all of those weather maps, but I don't know the practical things to do in a hurricane. And I found out that, I know what it was. It was Hurricane Aaron. And it was back in 95, 96. So that became my one and only experience with those things, and I lived in Miami for 2 years and had some hellacious rain, and I traveled to work every day in the rain. And when I say I traveled to work every day in the rain, I mean I literally did, because my car, which was a 1985 Chevy Blazer, by that point it was approaching 10 years of age. It had been in a great many different kinds of weather conditions, and one of them was the snow and ice and road salt of Minnesota. Now, I'd driven it in California for 7 years, 5, 6, 7 years, and then I drove it to Atlanta, Georgia, where I went to work at a radio station, drove it around Atlanta, Georgia, not a big thing, you know, I had some work done on the engine there in Atlanta, Georgia, and it snowed at the end of my stay in Atlanta, but wasn't anything too heavy, and then I motored up to Minneapolis, and it was there that I learned how to drive, I knew how to drive four-wheel, but I learned that it was actually preferable to drive your four-wheel drive truck in four-wheel high, in the snow and in the ice. Don't ask me why, but it was. Four wheels, you know, turning as opposed to two is actually better if you're driving on snow and ice, and I found that out in a very practical way. When I was talking to one of the guys at the station, he said, "I mean, you got a four-wheel drive, don't you?" I said, "Yeah." "Man, put that thing into four high. Have yourself live a little, baby." Because driving home every night, I was going about as fast as the rest of these clowns. They were all going about, you know, 15 miles an hour on the ice. Maybe 20, 25 miles an hour on the ice. He said, no, you can. I said, "How does that work?" He says, "Don't ask me." Well, make a long story short, I threw it into four high and there, or maybe four low, I forget, and there I was. There's Phil Hendry. Bang, man, 50, 55 miles an hour going home. You learn something new every day. And that was up in Minnesota. But what I didn't bank on was what the salt would do, because they road salt up there. That is, when there is ice, they toss salt onto that ice to help break that ice up. Well, that stuff gets onto the undercarriage of your car, and then you are driving in the warm climes of Miami, Florida, as I was, and the next thing you know, you look down and you see the street as you're driving your car. And that's what happened to me. Not only did I have it on the undercarriage of my truck, I had it in the roof. And so I had holes in my roof, and I was being rained on. Yeah, Yeah. Don't tell me I don't know how to save money. Don't tell me I don't know the value of a dollar. I will drive a car until it falls apart underneath me and beyond, until it's not worth anything, until I have to give it away because no one will buy it. Phil Hendry for president. We'll be right back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
And this is the world famous Phil Hendry Show on this Monday night. No better a night than to tell you where I'm coming from as a humanoid on this here planet, as opposed to going through the gymnastics that we do here at night, character voices and satirical premise and so on and so forth. And who knows, you know, maybe the show will morph into this. I have no idea, you know, but I like I said, I've been doing this show for over 20 years. I've been in talk radio for over 20 years, but I've been in broadcasting and radio for a lot longer. And, you know, I've seen every kind of change. I've seen every kind of technological change. Never seen anything quite like what we're living through now. And that is the what is on the horizon. That's internet radio. And I don't know how long you guys have been listening to your particular radio. I don't know if you're really all that well-versed in what's happening in the high-tech world, but internet radio, the download, the idea of multiple platforms, you know, all that stuff sounds confusing. But basically, here's where we're headed. Take out your cell phone and take a look at that, because that's going to also be your radio. I know it's now, you know, sort of your TV in a way. You can get, you know, I can watch YouTube on there too. I understand, but I'm not talking about that right now. Although that will also be your television, and it will. That will be your internet TV. That will also be your portable radio. Put your headphones in on the beach. There you go. You're listening to me, and you're listening to 200, 300, 400 other hosts, other artists. And your radio station will be one in which you can listen to any one of 300 or 400 different people. Right now, for instance, there are broadcast companies that are trying to wedge their way into that world. Clear Channel's one. They have a thing called iHeartRadio, and it's an app. And with all due respect to them, they don't even really know what it is they're dealing with. They really don't. Why do I say this to you? I say it because this is the reality of my world, and I'm having to look at that, and I'm having to adapt to that. Now, one of the good news for me is that in that world, the world that is now occurring in what has been my industry for many, many years, the number one guy in that world is content provider, the producer. In other words, me, the guy that creates the content. The number two guy in that world is the technical guy, the developer of these different platforms, the computer whiz guy. Yes, he's important, but everybody can do that. Everybody is doing that. Everyone is coming up with this version, that version, Wi-Fi this, streaming that, and a lot of other different ways of doing things. But there are very few, as there always has been, very few content creators, developers, and providers. So that's the good news. And it's also good news for you, because you're going to have more options. But it's a very, very different landscape from what I came into in 1973 when I was a 20-year-old guy and I was starting out at WBJW in Winter Park, Florida. And I was an overnight disc jockey. I was playing music. And we were coming into a new era. It was called More Music, Less Talk. That was the beginning of it. And if you started talking a lot, they told you to shut up. And everybody was very judgmental with how you said things. And it was a very restrictive environment. But that was the world that I that I eventually, you know, found my way into. And I didn't even know what it was I wanted to do in radio until I got into my late 30s. And I realized that it was talk radio that I should be in, not music radio, because I really hated the music I was playing. Hated it. I hated it. It's not that I didn't like rock and roll. I love rock and roll. But I don't want to hear Dance the Night Away by Van Halen again, man. I don't give a damn if the audience hasn't perceived it the same way. I had more guys telling me this, that, and something else. They wanted to go into talk radio, and I did. And I only knew how to do it the way that I do it. And the way I do it is real weird. Now, what we're talking about here tonight is an example of the way I see things. Politics? You got to be kidding me. Politics to me is like religion. Talk about it on your own time. Talk about it with your friends. Go to a city council meeting. Don't talk to me about it. Well, who are you voting for? None of your business. What do you think of that? I'll tell you who I'm voting for when we're in the right forum for that kind of a thing. But what we've done is we have jaw-jacked this topic to the point where you think people would be happier, right? You'd think we'd be more informed. You'd think that we'd be making better decisions than ever before. I mean, this country, it doesn't deal with it that way. Politics in America, folks, you got to understand, is not something we engage in a discussion over so we can solve problems. It's something we engage in a discussion over so we can be in the right club, the right family, so we can settle into a lifetime of, excuse me for saying this, being dumb. We can just sit there and be dumb. We can be this part of the family or that part of the family, join this club, join that club, and that's where we're going to be for the rest of our lives, and we'll never change, and I got no interest in talking about that crap at all. Unless I can make a couple of dollars at it. And then I'll lie. I will lie with the best of them. Talk about politicians lie. Politicians are in only one business. They're in the entertainment business. Why? Because that's what we want them to do. Wait a minute, Phil. Now you're losing me. No, what do you mean I'm losing you? You know what I'm talking about, don't you? No, I don't. What do you mean? Politicians are in the entertainment business just as much as anybody, just like teachers are. Teachers? Yes, teachers. Teachers are the entertainment business. Teachers will tell you, I've got to come up with some kind of a lesson, some kind of a plan, a lesson plan for the class today, because those kids will go home and watch television and watch any one of a number of different offerings entertainment-wise that I can't even hope to compete with. I got to come up with some way of holding their interest. I have to, in my own way, be compelling. Same thing with politicians. The guy out there that thinks Obama is a douchebag is never, ever going to change his mind. Never. Never. Even if he's been presented with solid gold proof that Obama's not a douchebag, he'll tell you it's impossible. The guy out there that thinks Romney and all Republicans are the scum of the earth will never, ever change his or her mind. Never. Even if you presented them with the absolute solid gold proof that Romney is not. Never. Now, you say to me, well, yeah, but what about cats like David Mamet? You were just talking about him, Phil. And what about Dennis Miller? And what about you, Phil? You changed a lot of... No, I didn't. I'm still the same old Democrat. Just so happens that my patriotism and my fervor for preserving my country came to the fore after 9/11. And it may be the same case with a guy like Dennis Miller. Maybe David Mamet actually did change his mind and become a born-again conservative, but those stories are few and far between. You will never, ever, ever convince people who hate Obama that there's something worthwhile about the man, and you're never going to do the same thing for anyone that hates the Republicans like Romney. It ain't going to happen. So if you're one of those people who feels I've got every reason in the world not to like Romney. Why, he's this. Why don't you just admit? Why don't you give us all a break? Do us all a favor and stop it. Stop. No, I'm not asking you to like Romney. No, I'm just saying quit bullcrapping us about it because we saw you coming down the street five blocks back. You will never, ever change your mind. Because you can't invest a lifetime of being a liberal. You can't invest a lifetime of that into being a liberal and then let the truth get in the way. Now, I know what you're saying. You're saying, Henry, you are talking nonsense. People are not that stubborn. Yes, they are when their own personal survival and happiness is at stake. Yes, they are. If you ask a man to change his politics, it's like asking him to change his religion. It's like asking him to change his woman. It's a very difficult thing to do. It's a lifelong commitment. It's a lifelong mating. He makes more love to his politics than he does his wife. We do a character on our show named Larry Grover, and Larry Grover was based in part on the reality, the political reality of America that was happening in the late 1990s, the obsession over the impeachment of Bill Clinton. Right or wrong, President Clinton should have been impeached or not. I'm not arguing that, but the obsession that some had was something that it was very real. And we created this character who lost his wife, lost his daughters, lost his home, lost his business, and was sleeping now on a cot in his mother's kitchen because he was just so obsessed with getting Bill Clinton out of the White House, impeaching his ass, and throwing him out into the street, that every other aspect of his life had gone into the toilet. Kind of like drugs, you know? It's kind of like alcoholism. But I don't see any difference. Now, I told you before we got into this next break, I'm going to do it. We got a break coming. I'm going to do this. I'm going to tell you how to make some money, okay? I'm going to give you an example. I'm not knocking Michelle Bachmann, please. She is a great example of a politician who's an entertainer. She's fantastic. She's fantastic. She's great. I'm beginning to think, and I'm not going to be that stupid, because I remember when I thought that the Phelps family, God hates fags, I remember when I actually thought that they were putting everybody on. Now, they're not putting people on, but they still are very entertaining. And if they ever wake up, they can make themselves so much money. I can't even begin to believe. I mean, they're a traveling comedy troupe, the Phelps family. Yes, the things they say are ugly, but they're so far extreme that they're a characterization of themselves. It's like the Poe rule, or what do they call it, where it is impossible to satirize certain people because they're a walking satire. The Phelps family is it. That's it. They're a walking satire. You cannot do any better, man. I saw a guy from an Australian TV station try to do it. He went over to old man Phelps at some kind of a protest that they were having, and tried to come on to him as if he was gay. In other words, it was like a homosexual come on to see what Phelps would do. It didn't work. It fell flat because Phelps just stonewalled the guy with his religious rancor. You know, he's just, you're a trial, that's fine. Well, go find yourself a boyfriend. It didn't work. You know? Well, Michelle Bachmann, to me, if she ain't serious, she's fantastic. Now, she says a lot of whack stuff, and the other day I was thinking about this. I said to Dan tonight, Michelle Bachmann, like tonight, is reported to have said in Florida that there is a spiritual hurricane coming to Florida just as much as a real one. There's a political hurricane coming to Florida just as much as a real one, and we better get right with him. And I'm asking myself, what is she doing? She's raising money. She's making money. She's making a lot of money. She's dropping a religious theme into her political pitch because what are you going to do? Are you going to go out there and start talking all your Republican right-wing stuff? Or, you know, you could be a Democrat. Same difference. You're going to go out there and talk all of your ideology. And what are you going to hope to gain from that? A piece of the Mitt Romney pie? A little bit of the... She was a candidate for the presidency of the United States. Michelle Bachmann is better than that. She's bigger than that. When she started laying that Jesus stuff on, she didn't say Jesus, but she started laying that God stuff on people. Now you're talking, baby. Now you're talking. Now she's talking God talk. And that's worth money. She's raising money because money's good. And I ain't talking about raising money for another run at the presidency. I'm talking about raising money. So her and the 19 kids or whatever she's got, her and, her fine gentleman husband there, I forget his name. I forget his name because all I see is him sort of mincing it. Well, I better not say. But so that they can live well. And that Jesus talk, that God talk, that separates, if you'll pardon the expression, the men from the boys. In this case, it separates the woman from the boys. Michelle Bachmann has got it all over the rest of those clowns when it comes to just motivating people and getting people out there and getting people whipped up and getting people excited over what and who and what you might be, because she knows how to lay that God talk on people. She ties it right in to the political pitch, and it's worth more than anything. It's worth more than Romney. Romney raises a lot of money because Romney knows a lot of rich guys, and Romney himself is very, very wealthy. But Michelle Bachmann, for somebody that just came out of Yahoo, Minnesota, man, she knows exactly where the bodies are buried, baby, and which the lay of the land and the which side of the bread the butter's on and all that other stuff. When we come back, we'll figure out what we're into. The bread, the butter, the lay, the land, probably the lay. The world-famous Phil, and I say that in the Hawaiian sense, as in laying a Hawaii, I mean, the Hawaiian lay. Well, you know what I mean. This is the Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back, and
truth
I will explain
is
further.
Our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back. Glad to have you here. Glad you're with me. Glad you're watching me on Phil TV and HD if you are. I'm glad you're listening to me. I'm glad you're going to download this tomorrow if you're going to download it. I'm glad you're a subscriber. I'm glad for the business that we do. I'm glad for the business that I do, because I don't see this as any different from anything else having to do with business. I said one time I was over on Twitter. I go, I think I have 10,600 followers on Twitter. I said, I don't have followers. I've got customers. And I try to interact with people over there on Twitter as much as I can. Sometimes it's very, very difficult to... It's tough to know what to say, man. You know, in other words, it's easy to say, oh, hey, thank you very much. Hi, how you doing? But you know, some people are so good with those tweets, man. They're just real, you know, funny, man. And I don't... I spend most of my time here on the radio show doing the radio show. By the time I get off the air and I'm over on Twitter, I got nothing more to say other than please listen to me, or hey, here's a link to something cool we just did, or hey, here's a link to something else cool that we did, or hey, here's a link to a link to a link to a, you know, you'll find something. But I do. I think I've got 10,500 customers. Money these days, folks, I know what you're saying. You know, didn't you tell us you're going to say how you make money, Phil, or how you would make money? Oh, yeah, I'm going to tell you more than that. I'm going to tell you how I ignore and how you probably do, too. But here's the thing. I don't want to do a Bruce Williams thing on, you know, let me tell you something, my friend. Here's how to make money. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm trying to say is this. I pass up ways of making dough all the time. The other day, I was... approached by someone who said, why don't you do a broadcast workshop, man? Why don't you do a broadcasting school? Why don't you do broadcasting lessons, Phil? And you could sell these lessons. You could do a broadcasting school. You could make a lot of money. And he's right. He's right. If I put an ad in any of the journals and it said, Phil Hendry Broadcast Workshop, now I'm going to show you how to be an entertainer on radio, audio, podcasts. I'm going to show you how to be a performer, a satirist, using the spoken word medium. I guarantee you right now I'd make thousands a month. You realize I could charge $1,000 for a 30-day lesson, and I'd probably get, what do you think? Oh, you know, well into the hundreds. Because there's nobody who knows how to do that. There's nobody who knows. I'm the only guy in this business. I'll take that back. I'm not the only guy in this business, but I'm a guy with a unique set of skills. Not only could I show people how to present themselves in terms of personality, but the aspect of doing character voices, of creating characters, and creating this kind of theater I could do. Now, not everybody knows how to do that. I could do it, and I would make a lot of money. Why don't I? Well, it turns out that as much as I like money, now I'm being honest with you right now. It develops, as Damon Runyon used to write, it develops that I must not like money that much, man, because there's some things I draw the line at. Now, this would, I'm telling you right now, this would not take a lot. It could be mail order. I could send out the lesson. I could say, hi, I'm Phil. I could do it on tape. I could do it by way of Skype. I could give people a private line and they could join me here on the video cast, and I could give them lessons in broadcasting. You know, there's a lot of ways that I could do this, and I would make a ton of money. Now, understand that the money that I made, it would all be up front, and gradually it would probably tail out as the market for this sort of thing dried up. But I could make thousands, and why don't I do it? Because there's some stuff I draw the line at. There's some ways of making money that I can't bring myself to, and I'm sure that, you know, you can well imagine, if you want to call it prostitution or whoring yourself, yeah, you know, you'd sort of get close to that concept. But there's more to it than just that. So seeing as how I'm hearing music, we'll talk about it on the other side of this break, The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.